Hello everyone and welcome to Rad Chat, the multi-award-winning first therapeutic radio-for-led oncology podcast.
Welcome to podcast number 129.
My name is Norman Joker Anderson and I'm joined by fellow host Joe McNamara.
Hi everyone!
So big thank you to our last guests, Cheryl Johnson and Sarah Davis, who discuss sex and intimacy for people living with and beyond cancer. If you haven't had a chance yet, please do go and take a listen. So we're very pleased to introduce our guest, all the way from across the pond, Samantha Skubish, who will be discussing her role as a Chief Technical Director in Radiation Oncology and Advanced Practice for Radiation Therapists in USA. Hi Sam, how are you?
Hi guys, great. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure, we've been looking forward to it. So could you start by telling us a bit about your current role and how you got there, please?
Sure, so I'm the Chief Technical Director for Mount Sinai Health System in New York, New York. And we have six radiation oncology departments across the city. And I oversee our clinical treatment operations and radiation therapists across all of those departments. And we are a growing health system. We're in a very dense urban population, as you can imagine, with a lot of patients to serve. And we care for an incredibly diverse patient population as well. It's a wonderful department. I feel fortunate to work under fantastic leadership and just have been given a ton of opportunities to do some innovative research and some really wonderful new projects under the umbrella of radiation therapy and really sort of given the bandwidth to think about how we do things differently and how we can do things better for our patients. How I got here it's been a long road. I'm pretty far on in the career, but I started as a radiation therapist, a treating radiation therapist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, which is just, in another pocket of Manhattan here in New York City as a treating therapist and worked clinically there for many years, pursued my master's degree in healthcare management and policy, and then relocated to Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami, no affiliation to Mount Sinai Health System where I am now, to do a fellowship in hospital administration. I learned from, again, fantastic female leadership in that organization and felt very fortunate to be there. They landed up hiring me on, and so I really sort of got my leadership roots in the ground in being able to work in that department. From that, I moved back up to the East Coast and did some project management and consulting work in sort of the private space, but have always been way more comfortable working in an academic setting where you can really sort of see the tangible outcomes as it relates to patient outcomes of your work. And so I've been at Mount Sinai now for about 8 years and hope that continues on.
I ask, what initially drew you to become a radiation therapist?
I think like a lot of us, it was a familial experience. I had a grandmother who was diagnosed with uterine cancer when I was in high school. And I had just gotten my license to drive that summer, and she needed someone to drive her to and from her treatments. And so that was sort of my first initial introduction, and had always been interested in a career in healthcare. And so that was really sort of the impetus of looking into the field more. I got my undergraduate degree in Southern Illinois University. I'm originally from the Midwest of the United States, and so that was a fairly local program for me, but a bachelor's degree level, which is what I was looking for as well, and was sort of a tiered program where you would obtain your certificate in diagnostic imaging first, and then have the opportunity to subspecialize into whether it would be nuclear medicine or radiation therapy or ultrasonography. And so I really liked that tiering approach too. You were able to sort of gain multiple levels of expertise along the way under the greater radiologic sciences profession.
So I think back in the day here, you would do a diploma in diagnostic radiography. Is that right, Joe? More from your era than mine. Mine was always going straight into radiotherapy.
How rude. How rude. Yes, there used to be diplomas and there used to be joint degree programs as well, but not for a long, long time. Before me, Norman.
But yeah, it's a good way to have that grounding into understanding how things work. So yeah, and obviously the patient care element is what we do in radiation therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the anatomy foundation, you know, just that was, I think, a big, you know, gave me a big leap once I did enter the profession to practice.
There's one thing you haven't talked about, which having, as Joe and I always do before any guest comes on, we always stalk your LinkedIn or try and find out information about you. Oh. So you won an award in 2020. Could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
I did. Yeah, that was such an honor. I won the ARRT I Am the Gold Standard Award. And if you remember what happened in 2020, we were in the middle of a massive, massive pandemic, right? So it was actually really good news at a really important time. It's such an honor. I won the Gold Standard Award for just, you know, several initiatives that I had initiated within our department, and just sort of being an advocate overall for the profession. And it's, you know, I think the ARRT, which is our credentialing body here in the US, so they provide our board certification, selects 3 people each year under the larger umbrella of radiologic sciences to receive the Gold Standard Award. So such an honor to be put on that list. And again, just came at a really important time when we all needed, you know, a little bit of good news, especially geographically where we're located in New York City. It was great timing.
So, Sam, you mentioned about advanced practice. Can you talk us through a little bit about what advanced practice is and your role?
Yeah, absolutely. We look up to you in the UK as a shining star, and just a model that we'd love to eventually have here in the United States, most importantly because I think we see the need for our patients. We see a need for our profession, and we see a need for our industry in many different ways. And so if I think back a million years ago when I finished my master's degree, my thesis was on pay equity for radiation therapists in my immediate market, so in New York City at the time. And one of the solutions to the pay equity issue I proposed was, you know, advanced practice radiation therapy. And I used the UK model as a reference. That was a very long time ago, and it's always sort of been in the back of my head. But once I started at Mount Sinai, I was really sort of given the opportunity, like I said in the beginning, to, you know, to have the bandwidth to really do some important innovative research and work. And initially thinking that, you know, I just really wanted to increase up the ante of the research component of the radiation therapist role in the US. It's a huge gap for our profession, but we see the patient more than anyone else, than any other discipline in our department. We care for them. We know what their cat's name is. We know what movie they saw over the weekend. We know what their son's, you know, best friend's name is, or, you know, so I would argue we are the most well-positioned to affect the quality of care, and that by building our own evidence-based practice and library of evidence-based practice and research, we can really make a difference. And I could go on and on as to why there is a gap in research in the US, and I won't go there, but the impetus for me to start to go down the advanced practice road was really the research component. I got connected through some colleagues in Canada and attended their RTI3 conference, which is just a fantastic conference in Toronto, put on by University of Toronto every year. It's actually coming up in a couple of weeks. And it's where I fill my cup. You know, I think there are those presentations or conferences where you're the one giving the information and the expertise. This is where I go to, you know, to fill up my cup and learn and really dive deeper into concepts that I've thought, ooh, I want to learn more about that. And so at that conference, I landed up meeting just several advanced practice radiation therapists, or CSRTs, right, as their clinical specialist radiation therapists. So I came back to Mount Sinai completely energized and like, this is what we've gonna do. You know, we're gonna dust off, you know, that master's thesis and start to think about, you know, how we might be able to do this. I will say that the stars absolutely aligned, quite literally, because at the time I had a clinical manager in my department, Clodagh Stars is her name, and so she was interested and begun pursuing a master's degree in advanced clinical practice from University of Sheffield there in the UK. And so between the two of us, with me sort of driving the strategy, we started to have some conversations with leadership within our department. And so just, you know, it sort of blossomed from there under our radiation therapy education program. So we have a school for radiation therapy within our department that's in partnership with Stony Brook University, and it's a very unique model. We have two amazing educators and researchers embedded into our radiation therapy staff. And with, you know, just their expertise in research, we were able to apply for several grants to fund potentially the first APRT model in the US. With incredible and just again, like immense support from our leadership, my boss, who's the vice president of radiation oncology, really supported this work and took it on to, you know, take it up the rungs and get the position approved and saying we've never, you know, nobody's ever done this before. We're going to be the first in the U.S., create an innovative model. And so, you know, I think there was just a whole multidisciplinary approach from our chairman, who was incredibly supportive in the beginning, you know, to the vice chair for research at our Tisch Cancer Institute, who's also a rad onc in our department, to our medical director, you know, to, it was just really a wonderful thing to sort of approach some of the challenges we were having in our department with an elevated radiation therapy skill set, and really to, you know, be able to do some excellent work. So we did get the grant funding that we applied for, which was fantastic and sort of legitimized our efforts. Some of, you know, so that's maybe sort of the local work that's being done within my institution. Clodagh is our APRT. She's the first in the US. She's focused on our inpatient palliative population, and she's just doing incredible things and really making a difference in the care that they're receiving while also saving, you know, a ton of money and creating better efficiencies for the whole inpatient throughput process in our department. We knew very early on, though, that we couldn't change the world alone. And, you know, one of our Canadian colleagues said, you know, you've got to get some more people on board here. So we started the National Advanced Practice Radiation Therapy Working Group, which I chair. We launched that in March of 2021. And now it's a group of individuals, multidisciplinary group of physicians, therapists, advanced practice therapists, international colleagues. We have a billing specialist. We have a physicist, a nurse. We've got all of the input we need to really drive forward an advanced practice model and prove an advanced practice model for radiation therapists here in the U.S. And that's the goal of the working group. It started small with just sort of our immediate network and it's grown now to over 70 participants and across 40 different organizations within the U.S. And that ranges from massive academic medical centers like Mount Sinai to smaller rural community-based practices. Our National Professional Society, the ASRT, has been incredibly supportive. And so the end goal is really, you know, to establish that framework, to do the research and the evidence-based practice to prove the model here in the U.S. And our hope is that it won't take us, you know, 15 or however many years it took Canada. I don't know how long it took the UK because it's been around for so long, but that we can draw from your library of evidence-based practice and prove that, you know, your outcomes do apply under the U.S. healthcare system infrastructure, and that, you know, we can do the research and establish the position and this tier of the profession along the way while drawing from the work that's already been done. So hopefully we don't have to rewrite the book, and we can, you know, sort of collaborate across the pond, as Naaman said in the beginning, in many ways, and really, you know, make a difference for our patients. I will say, obviously, the U.S. health system is incredibly unique to the U.K. and to Canada, and, you know, driven by a private payer system primarily. And so, you know, that creates a different challenge for us and a different strategy. But, you know, the models that we're seeing come to fruition in the U.S., which, you know, especially I can speak to our own model within Mount Sinai. Its value is in time savings of the physician, task shifting lower level tasks to them, and then how that translates to cost savings. And so I think the financial viability and the financial modeling has less of an importance than I think most people initially think it would, because we're so reimbursement driven and because we have a code for everything. You know, I think that there's still a ton of value to be proven when you create a more efficient model and a better model of care as far as the quality of care the patient receives.
I'm really keen to know, what do the patients think? Because obviously within an American healthcare system, they are used to having their kind of doctor on the phone when they need them. So how have they responded to essentially having an advanced practitioner care for them?
They still have their doctor on the phone when they need them. So if anything, there's additional support. And so, you know, one of the things that our advanced practice radiation therapist does is she goes up to the inpatient floor and meets with the patient and assesses them through a therapy lens. That's not a very common model at all in the U.S., something we never did before, and really starts to build that relationship with the patient, understands what their needs are, you know, discusses the case in depth with the radiation oncologist. And so it's in addition to, I think, you know, already having the physician involved at a certain level. She goes to the inpatient floor frequently, and now our rad oncs go less frequently, but they like that. And so, you know, I think it's a huge time savings for them, where they may not have to be physically present for certain things that they were previously. One of our main goals too was to create continuity for our inpatients in, you know, sort of an end-to-end patient throughput analyses. And, you know, our attending physicians are covering our inpatient services on a rotational basis. I think that's a fairly uncommon model within large academic facilities here in the U.S. 1 week Dr. A is on, 1 week Dr. B is on, and the week that you're on is when you get the inpatient referrals. And so, you know, there wasn't one person sort of involved in all inpatient care across the board once a patient was deemed appropriate for radiation therapy. And so creating that level of continuity, I think, is incredibly palpable for the department, because there's a go-to person for all of the above, and now also communication with other providers on the inpatient floors or in MedOnc or SurgeOnc or radiology or, you know, whatever it might be. You know, there's really sort of someone connecting the dots. And so we haven't surveyed our patients. We haven't, you know, collected a poignant study in that realm yet. I think that will be next. We are collecting efficiency, cost savings, you know, a ton of quality metrics. And we are collecting data from the radiation oncologist perspective and sort of the value that it brings to them. But I think the patient, you know, will be next. And that's sort of, you know, a point I hope we get to soon.
Sam, I have a controversial question to ask you.
Sure.
When it comes to advanced practice in the UK, some managers view it as taking jobs away from the consultants or the doctors. I know you mentioned kind of the lower level task shifting from the oncologist. Controversial question, is it the job of a radiation therapist doing advanced practice to just take jobs away, or tasks away, I should say, sorry, from an oncologist?
I mean, no, I don't think so. And I think here in the US, there's sort of two variables to consider when this question comes up. This is a controversial statement I'm about to make because people disagree on this. But there is a clinician shortage in the US, and it is not getting better. And I think that there has to be a solution to fill in those gaps. Our residency programs struggle to fill all of their spots. And so the interest within the radiation oncology field, I think, is it feels as though there's some challenges there. And then I think the second, you know, point I would make there is that, you know, the clinical decision making for treatment and approach and from a radiation oncologist perspective is becoming incredibly more complex at an incredibly expeditious rate. And so when you add something like an APRT, who is a high-functioning radiation therapist, you allow that physician to practice at the top of their license, and you are also allowed to practice at the top of your license. And so I think that's the optimal scenario, when everyone can be doing the work that they want to do and making those clinical decisions at the level that they should be making them. You know, do they need to send 15 emails a day about the same thing? No. Can the APRT take some of that off of their plate? So one of the grants that we're working with is a clerical reduction grant through our Office of Wellbeing and Resilience at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. And that's exactly what it's sort of meant to measure is, you know, by the addition of an APRT, did we improve wellness of our physicians by, you know, sort of taking away some of those lower level tasks? And so we're still collecting data, but, you know, preliminary results show that we are really making a difference. And again, it's simple things like just not having to go up to the inpatient floor as frequently that might really change their overall wellness and well-being. Physician wellness is a huge, huge focus right now in the United States, especially in a post-COVID state. And so, you know, beyond just taking tasks away, it's more than that. I think it's also about, again, you know, really allowing a physician to practice at the top of their license and making the clinical decisions that make sense for their expertise.
In terms of workforce shortages, does that mean that you have enough radiation therapists to be able to obviously work clinically doing treatment, as well as obviously a small percentage going on to do advanced practice roles?
There is a workforce shortage in our profession as well. The ASRT has a workplace survey that they conduct, I think, every other year. And for the fifth time in a row, you know, we've had a vacancy rate within our profession that has gone up. I think the good news is that the ASRT, which is our professional society, the ARRT, which is our credentialing body, and the JRCERT, which is our educational programming credentialing body, have come together on this subject. And they just recently held a consensus committee meeting that was really sort of a think tank for professionals working in not just radiation therapy, but also in the diagnostic imaging space, because they're in the same boat that we are, to come up with strategies that are actionable to really attract, retain, and advance people working in our profession. I was honored to be a part of that meeting as a guest of the ASRT, and a white paper will be published in a month or so with the results of that consensus committee. But I think there's some very silver bullet strategies that can be easily implemented in order to meet those goals and attract and retain new people into the profession. I think the advanced practice radiation therapist, for me as a manager, I have a little over 50 staff reporting to me within Mount Sinai, is a retention strategy at the end of the day. You know, it's an opportunity for those very high performing clinical radiation therapists who don't want to go into management, who want to pursue further education, have greater responsibility, but still clinically be involved with the patient, and also have a higher level of technical skill, you know, where they become the subject matter expert or the technical expertise in the room. And so we view it as a retention strategy, so that more people don't leave the field, and we're able to really keep that high functioning talent within our departments, because our patients need it.
You're very passionate about this, and I love that.
Oh, thanks.
What are the challenges you face? Because I'm sure there have been people who aren't as passionate about this as you are.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of work to be done, and we're just sort of getting started. You know, we've had our position at Mount Sinai a little over a year now, and there's other models popping up across the country, but there's no recognized pathway to obtain a credential in advanced practice radiation therapy. And again, that's what the working group is working on. And, you know, we need to have some evidence-based practice to get there. There's also no educational models, within the U.S. To really look at. And so that's the other heavy lift, is how do we build out an educational infrastructure that lends itself to the working therapist so that we don't have to leave the field to obtain a higher level of clinical acumen and education and credential, tier of the profession. So I think that, you know, getting an established credential and getting established educational programs are, you know, the end goal. And there are many challenges along those pathways. One of the models that we've looked at and learned from is the RA model, which is the radiologist assistance model here in the U.S. They are the advanced practice tier of our radiologic sciences profession, the only advanced practice tier of the radiologic sciences profession here in the U.S. that's recognized. And so we're trying to learn from their pathway and their process as well. They're struggling right now with obtaining the correct level of supervision according to CMS, so that they can get reimbursed for at a higher rate for some of the tasks and procedures that they carry out. So that reimbursement question always comes into play, I think, when we start to talk about advanced practice therapy. But our payment model is changing here too. And, you know, things continue to be bundled. And I think we're constantly expected to do more with less, to be more efficient with less money, to be more efficient with less time. And so I think, you know, advanced practice radiation therapy is a solution to a lot of these problems that are sort of gnawing at the greater, you know, radiation oncology industry right now.
Do you actively feel the kind of sense of just anticipation from the workforce in terms of these opportunities? Because it's certainly something that we saw here in the UK when advanced practice came through. You could physically see people going, oh my gosh, this is incredible, because it does allow people to essentially practice, a little bit outside of their scope of practice, but within that advanced framework.
Yeah, I think, you know, the more people we talk to about advanced practice and the more we present our research The more we're in front of people talking about it, the larger the working group gets, you know, the more moments we have like that where it's either someone personally seeing it as an opportunity for themselves, or it's a physician in a department seeing the need and, oh gosh, I'm losing my best therapists. How do I keep them? I have, you know, incredibly complex patients to care for, not enough time, you know, all those sorts of things. Or it's leadership really, you know, looking for ways to retain, you know, their high performing staff and make innovative improvements and create new models of care that lend itself to some of the modern challenges. And so, you know, I think we, in 2021, when we launched the working group, you know, people would reach out to me and say, oh, what is advanced practice radiation therapy? Can you tell me more about it? And so, you know, fast forward to 2024, now the emails I'm getting are, hey, I'm establishing an advanced practice position in my department. Can I get your opinion on this? So, and it's people I've never met before, you know, so it's really exciting. And, you know, I think that it's part of the conversation already, which is fantastic. You know, I think that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, advanced practice wasn't even on the radar for radiation therapists in any sense of the word. And now it's part of the conversation. People are talking about it. People want to be involved with it. And so, you know, it's great work to be a part of. And again, I think just so fortunate to work for a department that has allowed us to really, you know, build our own model, but also at a national level, drive the strategy and really sort of, you know, be able to drive the conversation towards, you know, really getting this official.
Does the kind of healthcare systems or the board, are they very different across the states? Just thinking of how, yeah, healthcare would work. So obviously here in the UK, we'd like to say everything's pretty much the same.
Yeah, so there's, you know, each state has their own scope of practice, and that varies. And then each state has their own licensure laws, and that varies. So, you know, state by state, it is very different and can be very different. At a national level, the ASRT has a practice standards, or has practice standards, and that's really the gold standard. I think a lot of states refer to them for their writing their scope of practice. I serve on the ASRT Practice Standards Council as the radiation therapy chair. And so, you know, those practice standards and scope of practice are written fairly broadly in order to allow for the variation of practices across the country. You know, a one radonc practice in the middle of South Dakota that has multiple facilities 50 miles apart from each other, those radiation therapists are going to be functioning at a very high level because of the lack of resources. And then, you know, on the flip side, take a place like Mount Sinai, where, you know, we're massive and, you know, our therapists are very high functioning because of the abundance of resources and the abundance of patients that we need to care for. And so, you know, I think that the scope of practice is the way that it is and written the way that it is to help and cover, you know, the variation of practices across the states. The advanced practice models that are existing today, you know, are not outside of our scope. I do see at some point a new scope being defined that may be a bit more detailed or a bit more refined to that advanced level. But, you know, I think we're in a position where practice variation is wide already. So to the point of, you know, sort of a standard, the ARRT as our credentialing body is recognized by most states. And so we see that as a pathway for an advanced practice credential, just like the RAs have a credential through the ARRT, that could potentially be a pathway in the future, and that would be recognized across, at a national level.
Obviously, just based on what I know from the UK's model, we're looking more now at enhanced advanced consultancy practice. Are you keeping an eye on what's happening around the world? Because I'm just envisaging you'll get your advanced practice all solidified and then you'll be like head in hands rocking on a Friday night going, oh no, now we've got some more models of care to put into practice.
We try, but we're so behind. You know, we're also trying to catch up. So we are part of the International Community of Practice, which I think was headed by a couple of Canadian colleagues, to sort of keep all of us together, because, you know, at a international level, we're still a small group of, of people really focused on this work. And so, through that group, I think we get a lot of information and exposure to sort of what's going on at a more worldly level. And then through our advanced practice working group in the U.S., we typically invite guest speakers, whether they're subject matter experts, APRTs, nationally or internationally, to present on their model or their outcomes, or just to help us sort of stay on track as we sort of continue to go down this road. So we try to keep up, but I feel like we're also catching up so much. And I'd love to have the problems that you have.
I don't think we can keep up in the UK, so I wouldn't worry. I'm interested from a pre-registration student experience perspective. Is this something that they are looking for? Are they kind of, when they join, are they thinking about their career development? Are they looking at what potentially, where their career can take them?
I hope so. I know within our own educational program, yes, it is something that we are obviously introducing to our students, and our APRT quota actually educates our students, and they even get to do a specialty rotation with her. And so they get to spend some time, just kind of seeing what she does, and looking over her shoulder and learning, which is really fantastic, because I think they will now enter the field with the expectation that it's possible. Our working group has an education subcommittee, and they created an infographic last year that was distributed on social media. The ASRT reposted it. That's sort of like, what is advanced practice radiation therapy? And we got a ton of feedback from educators on that it was so valuable, just in speaking to, people within their own institution, leadership within their own institution, but also to their students. And so I think that we're starting to get, to build up that momentum. I do feel like I have a very narrow view, because we are so advanced and advocate in this way at Mount Sinai. So, I'd love to think that the depth and breadth is very far. But the more momentum we build, and I think, the longer that this work is being done, the more that will be a part of it. And it's invigorating. I think our students are the future. And if they enter the field with that expectation, that's just more people that are going to make a difference in that way.
You mentioned, obviously, it's 2024. You've come a long way to get people to believe in advanced practice. What's the next in the future for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got a long road to go. This is, as you said, very passionate about really seeing this to fruition, because I think it is a need. I think that the profession of radiation therapy is noble, it is ethical, it is exciting. It's a wonderful, wonderful... it's wonderful, wonderful work to do. I think I just feel fortunate to be in a position to be able to drive this conversation and really create opportunities in the profession and create new models or better models of care for our patients. And so I hope to continue to do this work. I think we've done an excellent job of, starting to look at what therapists are doing in the day-to-day. There was a current practice survey that was completed last year by the ASRT where we asked advanced practice questions about how therapists are currently practicing. And so that publication will be coming out this year. And therapists are already practicing at an advanced level. And so theoretically, we have sort of thought, or there's been this train of thought that, you know, we've just never framed it through an advanced practice lens as it would sort of fall under one of the international frameworks that's been established. And so that was a huge milestone in 2023. The ASRT and the ARRT really allowed us to ask those questions through their survey, which was fantastic. And it's really driving the innovation in our profession. I think big gap for us is our physicians. And so I hope to see within the next year or two to really understand how our radiation oncologists at a national level can view the advanced practice radiation therapist being an asset to their practice. That's something we haven't done. We haven't surveyed our radoncs. We've been, you know, sort of churning away at the therapy level and, within individual institutions having very meaningful conversations about how, it can help with challenges in those institutions, but not necessarily at a national level of how radiation oncologists view the idea of advanced practice radiation therapy or how they view it as being a help or a hindrance to some challenges that they face. So I hope that happens. We're starting to try to be more visible to our physicians and be more in front. I think beyond that, to Joe's point, that, once we have several models across the U.S., we can start to find out what the patient experience is, how that's being affected. That would sort of be the next step. So, I think there's quite a bit of work to still be done in this area. I think we're just so lucky at Mount Sinai. We have, just a really great team that is just as equally as passionate about this work as I am. So, I'm not alone, which is great in many ways. And, we've applied for other grants to study an educational model, to really look at how we can build an appropriate educational model in the U.S. that would be successful. So we're still waiting to hear back on funding on that. There are sort of, if we're juggling many things, there are still many balls up in the air. We're waiting to sort of see what sticks and lands in a few areas. I think that it's inevitable that, especially at this point, that advanced practice therapy will be a part of the profession, for the foreseeable future, which is really exciting here in the U.S.
Sam, we're coming towards the end of the episode. Is there a top tip you might give to people considering advanced practice or hoping to implement it?
Yeah, I think, it will look different in every department. And so the adaptive radiotherapy space is a huge point of conversation here in the United States, especially from a time savings perspective of, physician time or physicist time, sped contouring or, being at the machine. And so, I think that it's while a scope of practice or a framework, such as your four pillar framework in the UK may be established here in the US, the actual day-to-day role will look very different within every institution, and that's okay. And I think it should look very different, and it should be a solution to some of the challenges that physicians, patients, departments are facing. And so when you start to look at it that way. I think one of the, you know, most valuable exercises we did initially at Sinai was did a whole entire process map of our inpatient process. Who does what task today? And if we added the advanced practice therapist, what would they do? And how would that make the process better? So we identified key bottlenecks and just really inefficiencies or areas that were of concern. And so, you know, I think when you start to build things out in that way, you know, with the quality improvement lens, and how can we make things better by taking the therapy skill set and elevating it and then inserting it at key points along, you know, adaptive radiotherapy process, inpatient palliative process, you know, breast radiation process, whatever it might be, whatever patient cohort really presents as a need, then I think you start to tee yourself up to do incredible work, but also to really make a difference. And I would just encourage everybody to study and, you know, disseminate that knowledge, because we really do need to build up our library of evidence-based practice here in the U.S. if we want it to be an established credential and tried and true model. And, you know, they can reach out to me at any time if anybody has any questions or, you know, wants to just brainstorm, because it's a lot of fun to think about what's possible.
Brilliant way to end. I hope you get inundated with emails this year. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been very insightful and very just quite motivating to talk about advanced practice.
Thank you guys for having me. This was so much fun. Thank you.
So thank you everyone for listening to Red Chat. Your hosts today have been Namanjoka Anderson and Joe McNamara. If you're utilising this podcast for CPD purposes, please consider the reflective questions posted, along with links to resources and literature that we've discussed. To receive your accredited CPD certificate, please complete the form linked with the podcast. So our next guest to feature will be Errol McKellar, who will be discussing his experience of prostate cancer and the Errol McKellar Foundation that he founded. Thanks for listening and take care.